As we continue to explore that funny, peculiar final book of our Bibles, we are presented with a vision. We have the author's dreamlike vision of a place that can only be held in our imaginations, the throne of God. The author draws here on a number of forebears who have similarly tried to imagine what that holy place might be like. From the prophetic description, I saw the Lord sitting on his throne with all the hosts of heaven standing beside him to the right and to the left of him. That was from 1 Kings chapter 22. And we could have the apocalyptic imagery of Isaiah's commission. I saw the Lord sitting on a throne high and lofty, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Isaiah 6. And Ezekiel's call. As I looked, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with brightness around it and fire flashing forth continually. And in the middle of the fire, something like gleaming amber. In the middle of it was something like four living creatures. We find out later that these living creatures comprising the pteromorph have the faces of a human, a lion, an ox, and an eagle, just as we heard described in our reading from Revelation. These are later associated with the four Gospels and give representation to the different facets of Christ Jesus. And while the language of Revelation seems incredibly ornate and over the top to us today, it follows in a tradition of such descriptive attempts to describe what is otherwise revelation of God, indescribable. We have to rely on our imaginations. And in doing so, as was the case with the previous attempts to describe the throne of God, the author of Revelation adds their own descriptive elements to the picture created. Hence, we have the 24 thrones filled by elders. No doubt he had in mind representatives of the 12 tribes of Israel and the 12 apostles of Jesus as God's attendants. What the author is doing for us is to give his readers a glimpse into the heavenly realm where God's sovereignty is assured and acknowledged by all. In doing so, that powerful image acts as a guiding light towards the future. This is the final destination with God's authority and rule acknowledged. No matter how messed up and confused things seem to be now, in a period dominated by a worldly empire and with Roman emperors declaring themselves deified or sons of the deified ones, the implicit challenge to that system by the imagery of Revelation is obvious. The otherworldly is being brought into this world and the reader is being transported beyond their own understanding of the way things are to a deeper knowledge of what is going on. Filmmakers have the ability to transport us beyond the ordinary in this way too. And at its best, worship has this transformative quality of recognizing the worldly, but also elevating us to a greater appreciation of what lies ahead. We have been gifted imaginations by God, which allows us to dream and visualize that which we don't know. And there are lots of examples of unknowns that we can only dream about. We live in uncertain times. Yesterday, I was in Perth for a special service and meal to mark the end of the National Youth Assembly. As I travelled down, I listened to the radio, keen to know what was happening in Parliament. I still had my sermon to complete, and there was a Brexit-sized hole in it. As I travelled home from Perth last night, I caught up with the fallout from yesterday's vote. Yesterday could have seen the end to the uncertainty about Brexit, but instead we're in a situation where a vote could take place on Monday, maybe Tuesday, to accept the deal our Prime Minister secured last week. But who knows? Speculating anything about Brexit seems to be foolish. By the time we leave here this morning, things might have changed again. Whatever happens, the months and years ahead will require vision. Those who want Brexit to happen have a vision of what life outside the EU might look like. They have their reasons for wanting this kind of future. And those who want to remain similarly have a vision for the future and have their reasons for doing so. It might even be that the vision is actually the same. A vision of a country where all can prosper and all have the opportunity to achieve. The difficulty with politics is that we can share a vision for what the future might look like, but the route there is often very different. Different political parties have different policies to achieve similar goals. Get our country back on the road to a brighter future, the Conservative Party. Creating an economy that works for all, the Labour Party. Demand better for Britain, the Liberal Democrats. It's time to choose our own future, the SNP. Our ambitions for Scotland are limitless, the Scottish Greens. These slogans were taken from the respective websites, and they all share similarities, and yet we know that the route to these similar visions for each of the political parties is very different. And the church is no different when it comes to having a vision for the future. The Church of Scotland in General Assembly back in May made a clear statement that change was needed. And change would have to come in how, as a denomination, we are organised, and more importantly, how we minister to members and those in our parishes. Things will be different. The draft presbytery plan offers a vision of what could be, but at this stage, we're left with lots of questions that will need answers at some point. The authors of the plan have set out a way of being for the Church of Scotland here in Aberdeen that is very different to the way things are. Things will be different. We in our corner of Aberdeen have been given a possible way forward in the suggestion that we work more closely with our neighbours. It will require us to be open to new ways of working, new partnerships, new organisational structures. Things will be different. It will require vision. The idea of one Kirk session looking after multiple church communities raises many questions. With less ministers, how do we provide worship in each part of the grouping? Are we to pool our finances? Where will the new church be built at Countess Wells? And the list just goes on. We don't have the answers at the moment. But what we do have is an opportunity to dream and envisage what things might be like, and then work out how to get there. The next few months before a final vote is taken will give us the space to begin this and to get some clarity. Unlike the Brexit question, there is no option for the status quo. The Church of Scotland does not have the resources to allow for that. There are just not enough ministers. We have too many buildings. Many of them in a state of disrepair, many of them no longer at the centre of their communities, and we are all smaller and older as congregations. This impacts on finances and the capacity of congregations to function properly, and it affects the morale of church members. The vision set by last year's General Assembly of radical change was not brought in to manage decline, but rather to facilitate growth. Last Saturday's night's movie night, we watched the very moving film, The Mission. In many ways, it is a hard watch. It's not a film with a happy ending. But in the middle of it is a story of resurrection. One of the main characters, Mendoza, starts the film as a mercenary providing slaves for the European plantation owners in South America. He is a ruthless and nasty man. After killing his brother in a fight over a woman, he meets a Jesuit priest in prison and is offered the opportunity to leave the prison and to go to the Jesuit mission high in the hills and serve his time there. One of the most powerful images in the film is the depiction of Mendoza carrying a heavy net with all his armour and weapons. The journey is difficult. He falls many times back down the hill he has just climbed. The weight he is carrying is too much. His journey becomes easier when an indigenous tribesman cuts him free of his heavy burdens. The symbols of his past are gone, and he is free to become a better person, and his personal growth is quite extraordinary. Cut free from his old ways, he discovers a new, more fulfilling life, one where he discovers God's love set in an idyllic mission high above the Iguazu waterfalls in South America. His life is resurrected. He encounters grace amongst the very people he has terrorized in recent years. Things are different. And we all face times when life takes a different turn. Times when the path we are on twists and turns and seems to have no end. Difficult times. Times when we can only imagine what is to come. Our reading from Revelation presents a vision of heaven. It maybe isn't the same vision that you have of heaven, but it is the author's description of heaven. And it's influenced, as we heard, from texts from the Old Testament and by the Gospels. It is influenced by the past, but it is a vision of the future. Whatever happens in the weeks, months, and years ahead with regards to our political future or with regards to how the draft presidency plan develops, both situations create an opportunity for a new way. Each will have visionaries that will help us see what is possible. And my prayer is that those that do so will do so with careful consideration and bring people into the vision they have. That those who are on different sides of any debate or discussion and inevitable argument can do so with grace. That words can be chosen carefully, and that hearts and minds can be open to what the future holds, a shared future. Amid all the uncertainty, the reading we have from Revelation, although a vision of a future destination, offers a degree of stability. Our reading from Psalm offers us a reminder of where that stability comes from, because there's one thing that does not change, and that is God. In Psalm 33, we're offered these words: "The words of the Lord are true, and all his works are dependable. The Lord loves what is righteous and just. His constant love fills the earth." Good words for a time of uncertainty, surely, and comforting to hear. Whatever happens in the future, we have God and we have his love. Our reading from Revelation is a vision of a place and destination for the future. God is in its centre. I want to finish with reading to you the words of a hymn, not one from our hymn book, but from one that was written for that Iona community. So I'm going to read it as a poem. It's entitled "God Who Stands Beyond the Future." God, eternal and unchanging, though unbound by time or place, yet with constant tender yearning, you sustain our human race. History in all its colours, present moment where we stand, hidden future still to open, all are gathered in your hand. God, who sees all human stories, you in each your touch display, sometimes known and sometimes hidden, you have met us on our way. Though we may have failed or faltered, doubted love, restricted grace, yet persistent you walked with us as we travelled to this place. God, whose life pervades each moment, meet us in this present hour as we open thought and action to your life-transforming power. Startle, challenge, and confront us. Touch our hearts and free our hands, so that we may see and serve you, yield to all your love demands. God who stands beyond the future. What's to come is still unknown. Yet unchanging, you are with us, and we will not walk alone. Go with us through doubt and darkness. Stand with us in hopeful place till the chain of time is broken and we see you face to face. Amen.